Find out what's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Find out about new shows, featured guests, and what's up this week. Find us on Facebook by searching keyword Voice America.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Impact Africa with Tope Fajanbasi. Africa has long been associated with needing aid and handouts. Today, you'll learn so much more about this wonderful continent from enlightening stories, people, and ideas. Now, here is your host, Tope Fajanbasi.
Good evening and welcome to Impact Africa with Talk by Fajanbasi. I'm very delighted to be back here again this week. And I'm especially excited because we're talking about something which a lot of people do not expect to be to be things that have business solutions when we think about poor sanitation and waste management, especially in sub-Saharan Africa. We usually think of it in terms of the government not doing something they should be doing, or you know, the government doing something extra. But today I have two fantastic ladies who are going to show us that poor sanitation and waste management are indeed public health problems in many sub-Saharan countries. However, they're telling us that there are major, major, major business opportunities in this regard. There are almost 2.6 billion people who lack access to clean sanitation, and another 2 million deaths that are attributable to disease and water pollution. More than $80 billion in terms of the economic cost of, you know, this poor sanitation issue. But today we're going to find not the problems, but the solutions to these issues. So today, when you go past your neighborhood and you see those open gutters, the drainages and the refuse dumps and the open toilets, you have to think about what you can do and how you can make money solving this problem, not just think about what the government can do. So like I said, today I have two amazing ladies who will be discussing these issues with me tonight. My first guest is somebody who, as a child, wanted to be the first female president of America. And today I'm going to ask her how she's going to do this, because she's in Kenya saving lives and making money doing that. My first guest tonight is Lindsay Stradley. She's the co-founder of Synergy, an organization that is tackling an 8 million people problem in Kenya's slums. Tonight, you will understand why Forbes magazine listed Lindsay among the top women who are changing the world. Lindsay, welcome to Impact Africa.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you for staying awake to do this show, because I know it's quite late in Nairobi.
And no problem. I'm delighted to be here.
I really definitely appreciate it. And congratulations, Forbes magazine thinks, and they rightly think so, that you're one of the top women who are changing the world. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think that I have a wonderful team here. We have about 100 staff now working with Synergy. So I think as an organization, we are making a strong impact, and I think have the potential to make a tremendous impact in the months and years to come. So hopefully it's foretelling of the future impact that I and my organization will bring.
Fantastic. And you said 100 staff? You've been around for 3 years. Am I correct?
Yeah, we've been working on Synergy for about 3 years, and we've been active full-time here on the ground in Nairobi for about 2 years now.
Wow. And you have 100 staff. That's quite an achievement. That's really wonderful. And how many staff did you begin with when you started?
We began it grew over time. So, you know, initially no real full-time staff, I suppose. Oh. I guess 2 years ago, I would have said probably about 8 staff. And then that has obviously grown steadily over time. And I think the number that we're at now is one that, you know, won't need to continue to grow at the same rate in the coming months and years. I think we have a really strong foundation of great young leaders from here in Nairobi throughout Kenya that are now, you know, working for Synergy. So I think we're in a great position to continue to grow our impact without needing to kind of double and triple the staff numbers in the coming months.
Well, congratulations. I think you're doing such a fantastic job. And, you know, creating 100 jobs in such a little, you know, time is really an achievement. But let me talk about you for a second. You're no stranger to social enterprises. You worked for a network of low-cost schools in the Nairobi slums. You co-founded a charter school in post-Katrina New Orleans, and you taught as a Teach for America Cups member. Why did you choose this path? You know, how does one person go from MIT Sloan MBA program to Google and then social enterprise?
Yeah, I guess I've always been really passionate about issues around urban poverty in particular. And one of the things that I really love about Synergy is that we are able to tackle a tremendous social problem that is core, to addressing the issues around sanitation is absolutely fundamental to improving the quality of life in especially urban informal settlements in the developing world. And we're committed to doing that in a sustainable way that's also building up the economies, you know, creating jobs and creating income potential for the communities where we're working. So, in fact, in addition to the 100 staff that we have, we actually now have more than 100 franchisees who own and operate our sanitation businesses. And they themselves have more than 50 employees that they've hired to help run those sanitation franchises. So that's now, you know, more than 250 jobs in the local community where we're working.
Wow! This is really impressive. And how does it feel living in Nairobi? It's definitely different from, you know, the United States of America. How do you like it?
Oh, I love Nairobi. It's true. I grew up in Atlanta, and they're not identical cities, I imagine, but I think there's actually a lot of similarities. A lot of the things that I love about some of the cities where I lived in the States are very much the same about what I really appreciate about Nairobi. It's a really youthful city right now. I think everyone here in Kenya just knows that this is a really great moment for the country and for the East African region. A lot of economic growth, a lot of Kenyans who maybe had gone abroad to university or worked abroad are coming home right now because it's a really great moment to be starting a business here. And I think people want to be present and really making a difference as Kenya's economy and society kind of takes off.
And, you know, you're right about the Kenyans coming home. I'm originally from Nigeria, but I know a lot of Kenyans who went to graduate school with me at Emory who have gone back home. In fact, one of my colleagues, she now has a bed and breakfast in Nairobi. And, you know, even though the business landscape is different in Africa, but this is a good time to be there, to get in early. But what motivates you? What really motivates you? Because, you know, I know, for example, that doing business in Africa can be very challenging, but there has to be something that keeps you doing this.
Yeah, I mean, I think doing business having a startup anywhere is very challenging. You know, as you said, I in a previous life started a charter school in post-Katrina New Orleans. And I think that in a lot of ways, the kind of obstacles faced there were much harder than starting a business here. That said, you're right. Things are never as easy as they should be. But I think my team and I are just incredibly motivated by exactly the problem, the challenge that you laid out in the beginning. You know, more than 2.5 billion people around the world lack access to adequate sanitation. And, you know, here in Kenya, just like you said, there are 8 million people just in the urban informal settlements alone who don't have good access to, you know, what you and I would recognize as a toilet, as just like a basic clean toilet. And so creating an organization that can address that kind of in the immediate term, but really even more importantly, develop a model and innovate and figure out what are the ways that we can scale this ourselves and also develop a model that, whether that eventually other governments, other organizations can also emulate to massively scale hygienic, sustainable, affordable, accessible sanitation to the billions of people without it. You know, that's a pretty exciting thing that can kind of keep you going when times are tough.
and those times are tough. You know, and now that brings me into the issue of sanitation itself. You know, when people think about sanitation, especially the type of waste that you all are talking about, this is human waste. When people are thinking about that, they don't even think about profit at all. But when I read your business model, I was like, this is genius. This is on every end, there's value being created. And how did you think about this?
You're right. I mean, I think what we want to do is exactly that, create value out of something that most people around the world think of, call waste. And so from the beginning, we said that recognize that the waste management, human waste management, is an issue that globally is a huge cost center for most public entities or private companies that handle it. And yet there's something of tremendous value. There's a lot of nutrients there. There's a lot of energy potential that is best case being treated and kind of put them back into the water. And worst case, most of the time, not even being treated. So it's something that has value that's actually now being very harmful, not just wasteful, destroying community health. And so one of the things that we're really interested in is looking at what are all the different ways or what are a lot of different ways that you can create valuable byproducts using this resource, this natural resource. And so, as you can tell from our name, SANERGY, we're very focused on energy, but even more so these days, the huge problem throughout East Africa is a lack of high-quality agricultural input. The majority of the population is dependent or is engaged in agriculture, and yet the fertilizer and other agricultural inputs are extremely expensive and in short supply. So to the extent that we're able to produce those inputs out of something that would otherwise be waste is something that's just really exciting.
It is exciting. And, this is also a place where this is needed. I'm thinking about Kenya. I'm thinking about Nigeria. I'm thinking about so many African countries that could do, with things to boost agriculture. And many of these countries, many of these economies are having to import fertilizer and to realize that the fertilizer is just right there. And, even for the places that have electricity challenges in terms of supply, I also see that, you're able to help that. And for the benefit of my listeners, I want to explain a little bit about how your model works. So you build a network of low-cost sanitation centers in the slums, and you distribute them through franchising to local entrepreneurs, and you collect the waste produced. And, again, the waste produced is human waste, and you process it into electricity and fertilizer. That is genius. that is brilliant. I couldn't think about that even if I had a whole lifetime. I'm telling you, I couldn't think about it. And when you brought this idea to Kenya, how did the communities receive it? How did people think about this, the possibility of you taking their waste and essentially selling it?
Yeah, so I think it's something that people have tried to do here here in Nairobi and in other parts of Kenya in terms of composting toilets. So maybe that's, on site trying to convert waste into kind of small scale fertilizer production. And I think this wasn't a completely foreign concept, but the challenges that people have had in the past is that if you try to reuse that waste product really right there on site, one, people, you don't really want to use energy or suddenly take a fertilizer right straight out of your toilet. Even you or I, who are very comfortable having...
I'm trying not to laugh.
Yeah, we don't want to do that either. So, you go talk to somebody in the informal settlements here in Nairobi, no big surprise, they don't want to do that. That they recognize that there's value there. And, you know, what we really tried to do is how do we connect that resource and the products that it can make to markets. And so that, you know, adding more value through higher quality processing, making, you know, really good fertilizer, finding, you know, those buyers who really understand the value of organic fertilizer and regardless of, no one really, at the end of the day, if you really are a good farmer, you don't really care where it comes from. You want to know that it's safe, that it's effective, that it's going to help you grow more crops better for a reasonable price. And just like you said, you know, prices for fertilizer here are tremendously high. You know, throughout East and most of Sub-Saharan Africa, prices for fertilizer are twice the global average price, twice the price that farmers pay in the U.S. And most of that due to tariffs and transport costs that, you know, because almost all of it's imported, just like you said. So, you know, what we really, I think what we found is that people in the community are very happy with the high quality service that we're providing. You know, we collect and remove almost 4 tons of waste every single day from the community we're working right now. And at the same time, then, you know, there are millions of farmers throughout Kenya who, you know, demanding far more fertilizer than they're able to get access to. And so they're very grateful for that end product. And, you know, the two understand what's going on between there, but there's not, neither is concerned about it because of the kind of high quality that of the service that we're providing to both sets of customers.
Wow. You know, I want to take a break right now, but when I come back, I really want to ask you some more questions about Synergy and to also talk about one of the headlines that I read about you when they said turning shit to money. And this is literally what you're doing. And, you know, this is brilliant. I really am excited to talk some more about it. So please don't go away. Stay tuned. I'm talking to Lindsay Stradley, the co-founder and CEO of Synergy, the people who are making money from waste and also improving public health. You're listening to Impact Africa. We talk with Fajin Bisi. We'll be right back.
News. Opinion. Your voice counts. Call toll free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com. Impact Africa is brought to you by Tope Fajingbesi's House of Ghania, an organization built to inspire. Publishers of What Color Is Your Money, we produce programs and publications and deliver engaging presentations to a wide variety of audiences to develop people and create stronger communities. We also endorse United for Kids Foundation, an organization committed to healing Nigeria and the world, one child at a time. Find us on Facebook at House of Ghania, Twitter at Ghania TFAJ, and on the web at www.ghania.com. Ask the experts. Call toll free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com. You are listening to Impact Africa. To connect with the program today, please call 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to Tope. That's T-O-P-E at ourfinancialcoach.com. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back to Impact Africa. We talk with Fajingbesi. Like I said before the break, my guest is Lindsay, and she is the co-founder and CEO of Synergy, an organization that is combating an 8 million people problem in Kenya, turning human waste into a money-making venture through fertilizer access for farmers and electricity supply for households. Welcome back, Lindsay.
Thank you.
Where I want to start now is you know, one of the major barriers to doing business in Africa, especially, is startup capital. And I see that, you know, you're really creating business opportunities by franchising, you know, to small business owners. They essentially own these toilets and people pay them for using the toilets. Is that how it works?
We sell the toilets as a small business to local business owners who live and work in these communities. So maybe they already have an existing kiosk, a small shop, some existing business, and they can add this on, either replace that business or add it on as supplemental income to the work that they're doing. So they'll buy the franchise, and then they charge usually a per-use fee for people to use their sanitation facilities.
Oh, I see. And how expensive is it for them to acquire this franchise from you?
To buy one franchise costs about $50,000 Kenyan shillings, which is about $600 US.
Oh, okay.
And so before that, they're getting both the facility itself. So we make our sanitation franchises. Our brand is called Fresh Life. So you get a Fresh Life toilet for 50,000 shillings. It's made from concrete, prefabricated concrete. So it's a permanent structure about the size and shape, roughly, of a porta potty. But again, it's permanent. And that comes with a set of additional assets. So like a hand washing stand, solar lantern so that you can operate it early in the morning, late at night when it's dark, mop and bucket. You know, I could go on with the list of other hardware, but probably most important to our franchisees is that we also provide a full set of services so that, you know, really supporting their business success. So that includes, we do a lot of branding work throughout the community. So throughout the areas where we work, people know Fresh Life. And you know, we want to make sure that's really the case. And then we also support them with direct marketing work to make sure that people in their, you know, in the 100 meters right around them know they have a brand new Fresh Life toilet. We have field officers who give them kind of business coaching on a weekly basis and also enforce our hygiene standards. And then probably most important to the franchisee is that our Fresh Life frontline team, the waste collection team, visits them every single day and removes the waste from their toilet on a daily basis, you know, leaving completely clean. And that's, you know, we have been operating for now almost 2 years and have not missed a single, you know, waste collection, whether that's during the recent Kenyan elections, during Christmas holidays, you know, what have you. And that's kind of a service level that's, you know, I would dare say pretty unprecedented in the informal settlements where we're working.
Wow. And, you know, that actually explains the headline that I was talking about that I read in the magazine recently about turning shit to money, because these people are able to charge. They're able to either increase, you know, revenue from, you know, existing businesses. I'm just thinking about if I had a little restaurant and I could just put this Fresh Life toilet as, you know, an additional source of revenue. So people who come to buy something in the restaurant can also pay me to use the toilet, or, you know, things of that nature. And there's, you know, so much, this is affordable. There's so much money and so much potential, not to talk of saving lives in terms of, you know, a better public health system. And you were talking about removing the waste every single day. And now this brings me to the people who remove the waste. I find this really hilarious that they're called ambulance workers.
So that wouldn't be our staff. So the ambulance workers, the ambulance drivers, they're sometimes called honeysuckers or frogmen, are the people who, outside of Fresh Life toilets, so kind of before we came along, or, you know, the other existing pit latrines, often in these informal settlements in the urban areas, the communities are so densely packed that can't have a truck drive in and exhaust a pit the way you might exhaust a septic tank, you know, in your backyard. And so instead, often the only way to exhaust a pit latrine is for guys to actually jump into the pit and empty it manually, bucket by bucket. And then, to your point, you're right, they are often called the ambulance drivers, because then each of these buckets is poured into, you know, large metal drums, and the guys will then and go running through the community from the pit latrine, usually to the nearest waste water stream where then the waste, you know, is dumped into the water. And, you know, and I don't want to vilify the ambulance drivers because in a lot of ways they're providing a valuable service to their community. If they weren't there, there wouldn't be a way to empty most pit latrines. And of course, the problem is it's extremely dangerous for their health. And then obviously that waste is going back into the waterways, you know, really destroying community health generally. But that just is due to the fact that there isn't sufficient waste treatment, and, you know, and as a result, you know, just millions of tons, in fact, 4 million tons of waste are dumped from Kenya's urban informal settlements every single year into the waterways, just for lack of any other waste treatment options.
Wow. Oh, my God. But you are changing that. You're changing the way that is operating now into a more, you know, efficient and healthier way of taking out this waste, right?
Exactly. Yeah, no, our Fresh Life Frontline team is actually often mistaken for transporting. But I guess now people usually know our brand and our logo and whatnot, but especially in the beginning, if we weren't as known, people might often think that they're transporting water or milk, something you're very, very hygienic because our staff is professionally trained, professionally dressed. You know, they have safety equipment, and obviously all of their equipment is always very, very clean. There's no sign of human waste because we must avoid any kind of human to waste contact. So, you know, the community would genuinely not believe that was actually what they were transporting. And so professionally dignified in their manner. And, you know, and our staff really has become very much public health and hygiene ambassadors. They're really proud of the work that they're doing, and justifiably so, in, you know, cleaning up their communities. And they really love the fact that they're not just, you know, not only are they removing, like I said, almost 4 tons of waste every day from their community, but also that waste then is getting safely treated and reused for you know, additional value throughout the community.
Wow. Wow. I'm really, truly impressed. And I have definitely learned a lot. I'm very inspired. And I think that my listeners are also going to be inspired to look at challenges that they see in the communities every day and to find profitable business solutions to those challenges, which is exactly what you're doing at Synergy. I want to thank you so much, Lindsay, for staying up tonight, for being here, for sharing your stories, and for being such a huge source of inspiration for me and for many other people out there. I wish you the very best, and I thank you so much once again.
Thank you so much. This has really been a pleasure.
Great, great. And we'll take a short break right now. And when we come back, we'll meet my second guest tonight, another inspiring changemaker and a trailblazer, Bilquis Abiola, another alum of the MIT Sloan School of Management and the co-founder of Recyclers, is adding the word recycling to the dictionary of many Nigerian communities. Don't go away.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com. Impact Africa is brought to you by Tope Fajingbesi's House of Ghania, an organization built to inspire. Publishers of What Color Is Your Money, we produce programs and publications and deliver engaging presentations to a wide variety of audiences to develop people and create stronger communities. We also endorse United for Kids Foundation, an organization committed to healing Nigeria and the world, one child at a time. Find us on Facebook at House of Ghania, Twitter at Ghania TFAJ, and on the web at www.ghania.com.
Did you ever stop to think that financial health can be a lot like physical health?
The financial physician, Lou Skatigna, has helped people on the radio for nearly 15 years. And now he's part of the Voice America Variety Channel. By using medical analogies to discuss financial solutions, Lou actually makes the process easier to understand and will help you chart your own financial fitness. Tune in to The Financial Physician live every Monday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 6 a.m. Pacific Time, and on demand anytime on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your questions. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com. You are listening to Impact Africa. To connect with the program today, please call 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to Tope. That's T-O-P-E at ourfinancialcoach.com. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back to Impact Africa with me, Tope Fajingbisi. I promised you before the break that I had another inspiring change maker joining me, and she's here now. My next guest is Bilikis Abiola, the co-founder and CEO of WeCyclers. Bilikis worked at IBM Corporation as a software engineer for 5 years. She holds an MBA from MIT Sloan School of Management, a master's in computer science from Vanderbilt University, and a BS in computer science from Fisk University. Bilikis, you're welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you so much. And, you know, first of all, I have to ask you, I'm looking at your resume, impressive, but I don't see anything to suggest that you would go into waste management. Why waste management?
Why not?
I think I have an idea of what happened. I think you went on vacation to Lagos one day. You saw all this waste, and then you got on the plane and you said, you know what, I'm going to do something about that. Is that what happened?
Yeah, so I'm from Lagos. I grew up in Lagos, and I just left to go to school. And every time I went back, you know, I just used to see, you know, how it looked. But, you know, just to let you know that, you know, the Lagos government also is doing really great work. But of course, you know, it's not where it is in the U.S. and other countries. So I said, okay, what can I do, you know, to make a change? And I took a class at MIT around how you can take innovations that to people that live at the base of the pyramid, you know, that the people that live on less than $2 a day. And in that class, I met a lot of really smart people. And that's where the idea for WeCyclers came up.
Wow. Wow. And when was this? What? How many years ago was this?
That's about 2 years ago.
Wow.
Well,
you know, 2 years doing, I have a nonprofit in Nigeria, and I can tell you, we've been doing this for 11 years. And sometimes I feel like we've been there forever and we haven't still made any impact. So for you to have done as much as you've done in 2 years, I'm totally impressed. And, you know, let me ask you, do you get any, when we think about waste management, when we think about doing something like this and blazing such a trail in a place like Nigeria, people would typically think, oh, you know, the person that's in charge is a man. It looks like a man's field, you know. Not necessarily that I agree, but do you get some of this pushback from some people who are surprised that you're a woman behind this?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure people are surprised. Nobody has said that to me, you know, but I remember there was a time I went to make a presentation somewhere, and after I made the presentation, I left. And then I met someone that was still in the room after I had left. And they said, oh, if she wasn't, I'm sure the only reason why she got this far is because she's a woman.
Wow. You know,
so it works both ways, I think.
I'm not sure how many things I've got because I'm a woman. But, you know, I guess some people think this way. So how easy or how challenging has it been setting this up and going, you know, on in Nigeria?
I mean, it's been hard. I mean, it's like Nigeria is not like, I always tell people that, you know, I lived in the U.S. for 13 years and I just was used to a particular way of operation.
I'm sorry, I have to laugh. Yeah, I have to agree with you.
It's true. Like, if you send somebody an email, they'll probably respond to you within a day or two in the U.S. In Nigeria, sometimes you might not get a response for like a month. So that's just the way it works, you know. We tried to open a bank account. It took us over a month.
Wow.
Something that takes you like a day. So there's so many things that are just really, really challenging. It's really frustrating, you know, but it also is very gratifying to see the impact that we are having, you know, in the communities that we work in. You know, I remember when I first started, my parents must have thought I was crazy. And they said, what are you doing? But, you know, they're really nice people. So they don't say that, like, don't do this job. But they'll just say, oh, have you tried other jobs? You know, and they just, you know, and I remember when my parents came to see where I was working and they really got it. And they were like, this is awesome. And for me, I think that's really what keeps me going.
Wow. I should be in Lagos pretty soon. And I would like to come see where you're working because I have, you know, seen videos, I have seen things, and I'm really impressed even without seeing it because I think that this is something that is highly necessary.
Thank you.
Know, and correct me if I'm wrong, you're like a middleman or middlewoman between households and the recyclers, is that correct?
Exactly.
Okay. So you get the waste materials from the households, you sort and sell to the recyclers.
Yes.
You know, I never even thought we had recyclers in Nigeria prior to hearing about you. How long have we had a recycling industry in Nigeria?
I think there was a time when the Lagos government said, you know, they're trying to promote, and that's when the new Loma MD came in. His name is Olaore Sonya, and he's really doing a lot of, you know, dynamic things in the waste field. And they were really talking about, okay, waste to wealth, how you can make waste to wealth, because they wanted the private sector to come in and really galvanize, you know, what they were doing. And a lot of people started, I want to say about 5 years ago, you started getting people that recycle things. And we have recyclers for paper, we have for plastic bottles, we have for pure water sachets.
Wow.
Name it, we have it in Nigeria.
Wow. And, you know, when they recycle these things, and are people happy? You know, in the U.S., when you see recycled product, you feel like, oh, I'm buying this and I'm contributing to the, you know, to the environment. Is that kind of awareness, you know, existing in Lagos right now? Are people feeling proud to buy things that are recycled? Or do you have to still do some work around, you know, getting people's psyche to come to that level?
Not yet. I don't think we have that yet. I think, you know, most people might even be buying things that are recycled and you don't even know it's recycled. For example, there's a company that I sell plastic bottles to and they make mattress stuffing.
And
you might buy a mattress and you don't even know that it's made from, you know, plastic bottles, or you might buy a trash bag and you don't know it's made from pure water sachets. So people don't even, I don't think people, there's an awareness. And usually when I talk to people and say, hey, you know, you can make such and such from plastic or aluminum, they're shocked, you know. So there is a need for people to see that so that they can, you know, pull and raise demand for post-consumer products so that it will encourage more entrepreneurs to go in and start companies.
Wow. And how do you know what can be made from what? Is that something you learned because you were an engineer? Like, I don't know what can be made from a plastic bottle.
Trust me, I don't know anything. I only know I'm totally empty. I don't know anything. I just know that plastic PET bottles, it makes like, you can make fiber, it's a cotton substitute. You can make, and I think you just learn. I'm very lucky because, you know, going into the market, and I met a lot of people that were really open with me. They shared their knowledge with me. And, you know, there was a guy that he also has a small recycling firm. And he taught me most of what I know. And, you know, also talking to the government and, you know, just learning along the way. You know, so basically it's really not that difficult once you see it every day, I guess.
Wow. You know, before you got into this business, how did the recyclers ever get anything?
That is an excellent question. So there is a network of people that you know, that they do go around picking up these things from the streets. They exist on the landfills and they pick up from the landfills. So they usually buy from them.
Oh.
But the problem with that waste is that it's not everything that gets there. You know, we have a lot of people in Lagos. Lagos has 18 million people, and it's not all the waste that gets to the landfill. So, you know, and then also another issue is that when you have waste that gets mixed with other streams of waste, it really degrades the quality. And what we are just trying to do is we say, look, we're going to go directly to the source, directly to the consumers. You know, being in Lagos, and that's one of the things that struck me was that people don't really have the culture of proper waste disposal. You know, like in the US, this don't litter, you don't, you know, you finish something, you throw it in the dustbin.
Yeah.
It's just normal.
Yeah.
But Nigeria, I mean, People don't do that. It's shocking. You can see somebody walking and they'll throw it on the floor. So it's really bad to change people's behavior at that step, because when you start dumping things on the floor, dumping it in the gutter, then it's hard to dispose of that waste, you know? You're making it really difficult. And in other countries, people don't do that.
And that's probably because there's a, you know, I like to say that the reason why this happens in Nigeria and not in many places is because there's a repercussion. In America, you're driving on the highway and they say you're fined for dropping anything out your window is $1,000. You're going to think twice before you do that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You're really going to think twice, because do you want to pay $1,000 for something you can easily put in your car and put in the trash can when you get home? Yeah. But, you know, for us, there's really no way to enforce it. And then this brings me to another question of the capacity of the municipal governments in Nigeria, or we call them local governments in Nigeria, to dispose of the waste. I can imagine with 18 million people in Lagos alone, there will be an enormous amount of waste that is generated every day. How is the government coping with, you know, waste disposal?
So I'm sure you know that in Lagos, there's two levels of government. There's the local government, and then there's the state government. And according to the law, it's usually the local government is the one responsible for the waste. So it's a local government of Somolu or local government of, you know, Lagos mainland, for example, they are the ones, you know, responsible for the waste. But, you know, because of the population explosion, because they really don't have funding, it's very difficult for them to cope with all the waste that gets generated. Yeah. So the Lagos state government now had to step in and create this, create LOMA, which is the Lagos Waste Management Authority. And what they do is they provide a framework for people in the private sector to come in, get a license, and they'll then go and collect waste from people on behalf of the government.
Oh, so,
yeah,
that's brilliant. When I see LOMA people, I just think about the people who sweep the streets, and they're doing such a fantastic job,
yeah,
keeping many of the streets of Lagos clean. So you collect items with bicycles, or what you call recycles. Is
yes.
that correct?
Yes.
Why the choice of bicycles? Is there an environmental reason, or cost, you know, effectiveness, or what's the reason why you chose bicycles?
Well, we wanted to be dynamic. We wanted to have something that could work in any environment, be it in a really tiny street in Lagos Island, or, you know, a nice avenue, or, you know, in Ikoyi. So we wanted something that, you know, could do that, and we think bicycles are, you know, are the way to go. We, and it also was for expense. It's much cheaper than a motorcycle or, you know, tricycle. And we also think it's a very good way to just really, you know, grow the employment. So one of the things that we stumbled upon was that, you know, as we started building bikes and hiring people, we just saw that, you know, that we are actually contributing to reducing unemployment in Nigeria just by, you know, having more bikes. So that was really one of the things that also motivated us to continue doing that.
Okay, and now, so when you're using bicycles, does it not mean that the bicycles can, obviously they cannot get on the highway. Does it not mean that they are limited to a particular area?
Yes.
And
yes.
So you have to have different sites for processing. Is that, you know, the case?
Yes. So what we do is that we're a very localized system. You know, we don't try to say, oh, you bicycle go around the whole of Lagos, because we don't want to kill anybody. So, so we give them like district. So you have a bicycle is tied to a particular location, and you just service people in that location. And you have somewhere that you can park your bike, you know, at the end of the day. That's the way it works.
Ah,
so on the highway.
So the bicycle, is the bicycle mine as an employee, or do I have to, or do I have to return it back? Or
well, you have to return it at the end of the day.
Because I'm just imagining them taking your bicycles for some nice ride, you know, at the end of the day. But, you know, that's good. Is there any plan to bring this bicycle riders, or this, you know, recyclers, to bring them in as sort of like, you know, stakeholders or some sort of business owners, so that they feel like they have some stake?
Yeah, I mean, we initially thought about that. That was the initial plan, was to have them as micro entrepreneurs, that this is their own business they will be making. But what we discovered was that I don't think at that level, you know, and we deal with really young people, we deal with people that are between the age of 18 and 35, they're really not that savvy about business. And I just don't want a situation where we start some and we're new. So we definitely need to have a control over the whole, you know, the whole experience for our customers. So for example, if somebody works Monday to Wednesday and thinks, hey, I have enough money for the, you know, for the week, I'm not going to work again. we wanted to avoid that. So that's why we wanted to make them employees. So, you know, they are really tied to, you know, there's a stronger level of control.
Oh, wow. So how are you then able to control cost if you have got different processing points in Lagos?
We don't process. So we just collect.
Oh, okay.
Literally, that's what we do. We just take it, collect and sell. Like we don't do anything to it.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's interesting. That's interesting. So, you know, I want to take a quick break. And when I come back, I want to talk more about the incentives that you give to these households to make them sort, you know, the plastic, the bottles and everything else. Because I'm thinking that this is going to be a hard thing, but it looks like you're doing it and you're doing it well. And I'm wondering what the incentives are. So I want you to get ready to, you know, talk to my listeners about that when we come back on the other side of the break. So you're listening to Impact Africa. We talk with Fajik Mesi. My guest today is the co-founder and the CEO of WeCyclers, an organization that is turning Lagos, Nigeria around when it comes to recycling and environmental sanitation. Her name is Bilkis Abiola. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
News. Opinion. Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com. Impact Africa is brought to you by Tope Fajingbesi's House of Ghania, an organization built to inspire. Publishers of What Color Is Your Money, we produce programs and publications and deliver engaging presentations to a wide variety of audiences to develop people and create stronger communities. We also endorse United for Kids Foundation, an organization committed to healing Nigeria and the world, one child at a time. Find us on Facebook at House of Ghania, Twitter at Ghania TFAJ, and on the web at www.ghania.com. Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk. Yeah! If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com. You are listening to Impact Africa. To connect with the program today, please call 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to Tope. That's T-O-P-E at ourfinancialcoach.com. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back to Impact Africa with me, Tope Fajingbesi. And I was talking about giving incentives to households to, you know, recycle. Because again, I might be biased here. I'm Nigerian. I grew up in Lagos. I'm in Lagos all the time. So I kind of feel like, you know, Bilkis and her team must be doing something to get people to come out and, you know, give their bottles instead of just trashing it with the other waste products. So Bilkis, welcome back. How do you get people to get to the point where they separate bottles, they separate paper, they separate, you know, this recyclable materials?
And you know, when we first started, we actually felt the same way. We said, we know how Nigerian people are. We don't think it's going to work. But what we did was we did some tests. We said, hey, we asked some people in some communities that, what if we gave you something for your effort? And they, you know, we had a very good response. And what we try to do is that we let people have control. You know, whenever you give us waste, we measure the waste. So we'll weigh it in front of you. Oh. And within a day or two, you will get a text on your phone saying, hey, 2 days ago you gave us 5 kilograms of plastic and 3 kilograms of sachets, and you have such and such points.
Wow.
Yeah, so, and every week, once you keep recycling, you keep getting more points and more points.
Ah.
And so it's kind of like a savings plan with your waste. And every 3 months, then you can now redeem. So we're actually having a redemption right now. For a few points, you know, the lowest level, you could get something like a, you know, like a face cap or like a small small bowl or a bucket.
Wow.
But with more points, if you have more points, you can get, maybe your child can get some Milo. which is the, you know, the, or even, you know, and the higher points get like a TV or even a small generator. So the more and more points. And one of the things that really struck me was that, you know, when we first started, and I'm really impressed by the Lagosians for this, is that we thought, oh, everybody's going to give us like a little bag. You know, we're not going to get much. But some people really took this thing. Some people, like I said, oh, they're going to give me 1 kilogram a day. Some people, there are some people that have given us 200 in a day.
Wow.
I mean, 200 kilograms is like, if you talk about 200 kilograms in plastic bottles, that's like two of my bicycles full.
Wow.
You know, I've had people that gave me one ton of waste in 3 months.
Oh my God.
So people pick, like, well, what they end up doing is that they go and pick on the street, or they'll tell their church members, keep all your plastic for me. So people really, they don't joke. And then, there's a level of entrepreneurship and, they're very enterprising.
Wow, this is genius. I'm telling you, this is brilliant, because think about it, Nigerians, you have just figured out what we like. Nigerians love to be rewarded. You want to go to a wedding, even though you've got enough plastic bowls in your house, you still want to get the one that is being given out as a souvenir. And if you don't get it, you get really mad.
Let me tell you a funny thing. So I went to a party recently, and I was all dressed up, all glammed up, and they were giving out buckets, and I have buckets in my house. I mean, people, it's true. It's just, we like freebies.
Yes. It's our way. It's true. And if you didn't get that bucket, you're going to have a conversation with somebody about why you didn't get it. So you can just imagine now telling people that what they would have trashed anyway, what they would not have taken a second look at, you're going to reward them for giving that thing to you. That's unbelievable. I know a way that you can reward me. If I live in Lagos, if you could get me on the set of Tinsel, I would give you I'll give you a ton of waste. I'll give you anything you want.
Okay.
You know,
I'll work on it.
Please work on it. And I'll even campaign and get more people for you. So, you know, obviously I think this is really wonderful. And you talked a little bit at the beginning about government. Usually, a lot of people, when they go to places like Lagos, places like, you know, Nigeria, many developing economies, when you have to work with the government, is usually like pulling teeth. The bottlenecks, the brouhaha is just unbelievable. What's your experience like working with the government?
So we've been very fortunate. The Lagos state government is just different. I mean, ask anybody that knows Nigeria. Lagos state government is different. It's like Lagos is its own country. Because they have their act together. There's really, truly are full of really smart people. Smart, hardworking people. There's sometimes that I go and they're still working at 9 p.m. in the night.
Wow.
And this is government. I mean, imagine that. And usually when you see civil servants, they close at, you know, 3 p.m. Lagos government is working at 9, 10. You know, wow. So they're really hardworking people. And, you know, we've been very fortunate. I'm very glad you asked me that question, because I wanted to just, you know, let you know about how they've really helped us. The Commissioner for Environment has been very helpful, Tunji Bello. Wow. Then also the Loma MD, Mr. Olaire Sonia, has also been very, very fantastic. They always help us out. You know, we use their, their infrastructure, and, you know, they give us a lot of advice, and, you know, we definitely would not have gotten to where we are. They even also sponsored 5 We Cycles.
Wow.
Of the We Cycles that I have, and I have 11, they paid for 5.
Wow. Wow. That's impressive. That's really great. You know, I'm really excited. I want you to say one final word. I have about a minute to go here. And what's the biggest business challenge that you face, and how are you overcoming that?
So for us, I think it's people. It's getting people that are smart, that are motivated, that are, you know, ready to work hard. You know, and it's something that is a bit disappointing, being a Nigerian, just to see the kind of, challenge that people in business face. So I really would love to see, or to get access to, a really good pipeline of really hardworking, talented, dynamic people. So for me, the thing that's top of mind for me is people.
Wow. And, you know, I definitely, like I said, I do a lot of business in Nigeria and I definitely share that concern. You know, thank you so much, Bilkis. You're really inspiring. I think this is genius and I wish that you guys will continue to expand and even get to other parts of Lagos. Thanks for coming on the show. I know you're extremely busy, but I really appreciate chatting with you today. I hope we'll be in touch and that I'll continue to, you know, see more progress from WeCyclers.
Thank you. I was really happy to be here. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thank you very much for everybody who listened today and for the to all the team at Voice America Talk Radio. I really would love to be here again same time next week and to share another exciting story and some other exciting and inspiring people with you. Thank you and have a good night.
Thank you again for tuning in to Impact Africa. Please join Tope Fajingbesi again next Thursday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Have a good week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.